All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, January 12th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. You can head over to the site now. There's still time to get access to our NFL projections, which we've had a fantastic year in NFL, so there's still a chance to grab those projections and optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. That also includes our NBA projections and optimal lineups as well. So it all falls under one subscription package. We think you'll go over there, you'll come for the NFL, you'll stay for the NBA, and then you'll just be like one of our many
so happy all the time,
basically. Yeah, long time members. So head over to dfsr.com/membership and you're all set to go. All right, so we have four game divisional round of the NFL playoffs this week. It's a pretty interesting round of games, I would say. Not the easiest thing to make lineups this week, I would say, just by initial glance of there's just some very top end guys, and you're probably going to be stuck with kind of staring down the barrel of a situation where you're just not going to be able to play one of the guys that you want to play. So there's some very, very high top end value that seems, I don't know, moderately safe going in. But the pricing is such that it seems like we're going to be stuck with a situation where you are just maybe grinning and bearing it and playing someone that just doesn't look that good. I don't know. We're going to go game by game here. So, and kind of break down the different plays from each game. But I don't know what your general feeling of, like, sort of first glance, the way lineups are shaking out, what your feeling on this week is.
They feel like they look worse than they did earlier this week. So I don't know if more information has come to light or we've changed some inputs or something. But it kind of feels like there were some ways you could go earlier in the week that felt a little bit better. So I think it's going to be, frankly, just trying to go through and making sure all the inputs are correct and ironing things out. But yeah, I mean, to your point, and again, we'll go game by game through all of this, but there's going to be some elite plays that everyone's trying to get in there, notably Rodgers, Bell, and Brown probably, and you're not going to be able to play all three, at least on FanDuel. Well, DraftKings either, but I currently have the FanDuel tool open right now, and yeah, you're going to wind up with some names that will feel like head scratchers, at least at the beginning.
All right, let's start with Atlanta and Seattle. Atlanta comes in here, they have a very high powered offense led by Matt Ryan. They get not an elite defense in Seattle, but a very, very good defense, top five defense in the season in terms of DVOA, particularly good against the rush. My issue with Atlanta just in general is not that they're not a great offense, they are, it's that just who rises to the top. They've been pretty inclined this season to spread the ball around a lot, just between their running situation and even their receivers. They've had some injuries there as the season's gone on. You know, Julio Jones has been banged up at times. He seems like he's healthy now, but I'm just like not sure. Like, and the one kind of hand they have, I believe, the highest over under of the week. Actually, no, it's pretty close, but they have a very high implied total. And at the same time, I feel like we get stuck just not knowing who to play from the team. What are your feelings on Atlanta?
Yeah, well, it's one of these situations where there's a lot of mouths to feed, and you know, like there's been weeks where we've liked Devontae Freeman. I don't think that's what's going to happen this week against a much tougher defense than the defenses that we liked him against. Matt Ryan is a guy you can consider from time to time, but it's weird for him because he winds up being priced like the other elite quarterbacks, the other elite DFS quarterbacks, but he gives enough away in terms of the touchdown equity to the powerful running game that they have that, you know, it's like the sum of the parts is a little bit less than the whole, you know, like all these individual parts, they wind up not quite fitting. That being said, like, it's, you know, good weather game here and relatively tight spread, at least compared to the Patriots game, for instance. And, you know, I don't fault anyone, I guess, for considering these guys, but I think the offense as a whole was so good that all of their prices rose up just enough to edge them out of consideration, even on a short slate in such a tough defensive matchup.
And that's the problem here. So you're not getting discounts on any of these guys facing a good defense. So you get a Julio Jones question marks. He's 8,300 and probably going to get a lot of the Richard Sherman treatment. Now, he did kind of blitz Seattle earlier in the season, so there is some reason to believe that he could put up a good game. He was very good against them earlier on. But it's really hard to kind of hone in on that as safe kind of cash game value. So I think there's a case to be made for stacking. I think there's a case to be made for tournaments to play Freeman and just see, like, you kind of hope that he gets 20 carries because he's not totally crazy expensive here, and some of the other running backs just sort of are. But yeah, the Atlanta situation, it's just weird. It's weird to have this good of an offense and not be able to completely figure out who, if anyone, you're going to play, and then you're kind of just going to be watching the Atlanta game and just kind of, I think at least our system, as far as our system is concerned, we are going to basically be watching the Atlanta game and really, really rooting for the Seattle defense because I just can't, I'm just not seeing how we're going to get some of these prices in. So,
I mean, for cash games, absolutely. I mean, I could definitely see Freeman. I mean, Freeman, frankly, just has as much upside as Le'Veon Bell on a game-to-game basis. And, you know, when you can pay $2,300 less for that in a big tournament, it does free up money elsewhere. But, yeah, no, for cash games, none of these guys make the cut.
You know, there's a couple cheaper. I mean, Taylor Gabriel should be back this week. I'm not sure. His price climbed just enough, and he kind of had a bunch of run hot, especially in the touchdown department. So I'm not sure. I mean, he's $4,400 on DraftKings. That's pretty cheap. I can imagine people kind of going that direction just because his skill set is good enough and cheap enough that you can probably take a, you know, take a stab at it. I'm not, wasn't,
I don't know, with Sanu and Jones both healthy, it doesn't
well, that's,
feel good.
That's the problem, right? It's like he wasn't playing all their snaps. Like, he's not an every down wide receiver in their traditional, right, just like in their sets. So he's just not going to see 100% of the offensive snaps just to start. So I think you can see people talking themselves into it because of the price. I was not exactly sure where to set his target percentage at this week, just because they are quote unquote as healthy as they've been in a while. And so he was just kind of a weird guy. Like, I just wasn't exactly sure. Well, he's one guy that we'll kind of take a look at as the we get more into the weekend, specifically today and tomorrow, to make sure everything is kind of set going in. But Gabriel is one of these guys. Like, Justin Hardy's one of these guys. They're very cheap. You can't rely on them really for any kind of quote unquote safety. But they're the cheaper guys on a team that's supposed to put up points. So that's going to be sort of where we go looking. Those are some of the specific things we'll be looking going into Saturday. Seattle's interesting on the other side. You know, Thomas Rawls was absolutely horrible the last 4 weeks of the season. I think like five of the last 6 weeks of the season, he was way worse than replacement level in terms of just what you
would call
your running back. And then last week comes out, and just obviously, I mean, like clockwork, just tears it up, goes crazy, rushes for over 150 yards. Is that a real thing against this Atlanta team? Do you think they kind of just try to play ground and pound against Atlanta, trying to keep them off the field? Do you think Rawls, you know, Rawls is cheaper than some of the guys like Bell and Elliott. I'm just not sure I can totally trust that he's good. Like, I know he had a very good game. Is Rawls a good running back? Like, I'm just not totally sure.
Yeah, I mean, so for starters, he's hashtag cheaper for a reason. Like, he's much worse than those guys. And just the Seattle running game in general is much worse. Now, Atlanta is a very interesting team to evaluate from an opposing DFS perspective, because this is like the old Mike Tyson quote, like, everyone has a plan until they get hit. People's plan against the Falcons all season has been, well, let's just run the ball, right? Like, they're weak against the run. They're a bottom five team in terms of yards per attempt. We'll just run the ball and we'll control the clock, whatever. The problem is that it just hasn't worked out, right? Like, you run the ball, they pound you in with some airstrike, their mix of good running and passing, you get the ball back, you're like trying to run, but now you're down by a few points, and all of a sudden you're just passing, right? And so, you know, that they've allowed this hefty yards per attempt amount, but in terms of just raw attempts on the season, they've allowed the fifth fewest attempts. And so it's just a really weird situation to evaluate, because then you get these other factors like, sure, their yards per attempt were high, but was that because they were basically loading up against the pass because they were up by 14 points? And so it's very, very tricky to evaluate this. You know, I know DVOA can weigh in on things like this a little bit better in some ways, but, you know, it has its own limitations. So I don't know. I mean, all in all, Rawls is not a guy who reeks of safety to me. That being said, I wouldn't hate playing him in a game that rates to be a 4-point spread, you know, at least per Vegas. It's just that I wouldn't feel like it was super safe. But, you know, it's a small slate. It's going to be, and the slates only get smaller from here. So, you know, you got to make your pick somewhere. And I think he's a reasonable place to invest a few bucks.
You know, they're not huge underdogs, and I could see people talking themselves into it just because of last week. I mean, really nobody played him last week because he had been so very bad. And so the 27 for 161, you just can't really – the other funny thing is you can't be a bad running back and put up those numbers. So this is where I get really confused about Rawls, right? Like, it's hard for, you know, a guy like – I'm just trying to think of an example. Like, James Starks coming in for Green Bay is probably just not going to run for 6 yards a carry just because he's just not that good, right? And so, I'm just kind of picking a name off the top of my head. But so this is where I just get confused on a guy like Rawls. I think your point is true in that if they get up, you could see another 25 carries out of him, and all of a sudden he's paying this price just absolutely going away if he can get any of that going. So, yeah, he's going to be a guy – kind of take a hard look at. There's enough other running backs that are their situations seem pretty locked up that I don't think we need to force Rawls in. But what about the Seattle passing game? You get a guy like Baldwin. Baldwin has turned into, I would say, almost just an elite wide receiver one at this point, especially with Tyler Lockett out. Is he safe for cash games? Like, is Baldwin sort of script independent here? Like, it doesn't matter if Seattle's kind of winning or losing. We probably would rather him be playing catch up, but is the possession stuff for him enough to just say it doesn't matter like what how the game goes? Baldwin is just kind of safe here.
Yeah, I mean, Baldwin's interesting because he's so different from your conventional wide receiver ones in that he really cuts his teeth by just hauling in a huge percentage of the targets that are thrown his way. So, you know, last week was the case study of that, 11 receptions on 12 targets for 104 yards and a touchdown. He's just an excellent wide receiver, especially for what Seattle wants to do with the ball. And so particularly if they want to control the clock, if they want to maintain possession, they're not going to want to be launching the ball downfield. I think Baldwin is a great place to begin. And yeah, the price has gone up quite considerably, but like Rawls, like price has gone up for a reason. And so I think you can absolutely trust him. I don't know that you necessarily want to be, like, if you had to choose between him and Antonio Brown, if you had the money left over or whatever, you'd probably want to choose Antonio Brown, but that extra savings might be the difference between playing Baldwin and a guy like Davante Adams or playing Brown and a guy like, I don't know, some much worse wide receiver that you don't really feel excited about. So yeah, I think his price point will wind up having him fit into a lot of lineups that, you know, you might not think even at that price.
Yeah, it's really interesting with Atlanta because they are arguably one of the worst defenses, at least in terms of DVOA, playing this week. But that is weird because you're not, this is where it's hard to evaluate some of these numbers because teams have had to play so much catch up against them over the course of the season that, you know, what's the real number in their defense? We have Baldwin as one of the highest just overall raw points guys going into this week just because, you know, Julio Jones against Seattle and Antonio Brown's against KC, those are bad matchups for those two guys. And yep. And Atlanta is just not a bad matchup for a guy like Baldwin. And so, you know, while it looks a little weird to have him sort of in the same raw points area as those two guys who are, I would know, we would both agree are clearly better in terms of just being talented wide receivers, the situations for them are so much worse that at what point the situation sort of outstrip talent. And I think that's really what we're staring down the barrel at this week is how much does who you're facing really matter in terms of your safety. And it's going to be really, really close to Baldwin. And I don't know if I feel totally confident with our projections. I feel confident in the projections in the sense that but I don't feel confident in making sure we're just 100% figuring that out clearly. Because, like, again, pedigree does sort of rise to the top. I'm kind of just going on and on here, but
But it is the devil's bargain. I mean, it really is at the core of trying to figure out what to do during the playoffs, because the bottom line is, during the season, we have 15, 16 games going on at a time, and you don't need to make decisions like these. You just don't play guys in bad matchups, generally speaking, unless they're really broken price-wise, like Le'Veon Bell or somebody. But in the playoffs, you don't get that luxury, and so having to decide between, you know, Baldwin in a good matchup or Brown in a bad matchup is the core of playing playoff DFS.
The bottom line is, too, 12 targets is elite. That was 12 targets in a game that they were winning. I mean, the touchdown was a garbage time touchdown, so I not have to wipe it away, but the game was already pretty much over when he scored that touchdown, and so that does buoy some of his overall numbers. But again, before that, he had 11 targets leading into that, and that's just, there are very few wide receivers in the league that are getting that kind of target share on a week-to-week basis, and that is a real number for him. There's a sample size enough for him that I feel pretty confident with that kind of opportunity. You know, Russell Wilson, sort of the same kind of guy in terms of game script, right? And he has the ability to run. He didn't really do it last week at all. You know, ran for negative 3 yards. Only had a throw for 224 yards. But again, that's just because they made their intentions clear from the beginning. It was going to be Rawls left, Rawls right. If we're in a third down situation, maybe we'll pass. You know, first down, Rawls left, Rawls right. And so I just don't think they're going to be able to play that same kind of game plan this week against Atlanta. How do you see Russell in terms of just his floor going into this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a very solid floor. You know, again, this is another one of those situations where if you're just comparing straight up matchups, like, he's got one of the better ones on the weekend. Atlanta not necessarily known for their pass defense or their defense at all, really. You know, but passing in particular, they've allowed, well, again, kind of another weird situation where they've allowed the fifth most passing yards overall, but when you break it down by yards per attempt, they fall into kind of the good but not great tier. You know, again, these teams are all clustered so tightly, but, you know, tied with five other teams for the 10th best yards per attempt in the league. That being said, like if Seattle really is, if they do fall behind, you know, there's a lot of game scripts where the Seattle Seahawks just have to rely on Russell Wilson. If Rawls can't get it going early, if Rawls does get it going early, but the Falcons get it going even more, like there's a lot of things that could break Wilson's way in this game. And kind of like Baldwin, he's also not that cheap compared to what he actually does on a week-to-week basis. Like, you'd be pretty unhappy with any of his last two performances on an $8,200 price tag, and you'd be thrilled with the two before that. So, you know, I don't know what you do with that necessarily, other than say, you know, in the playoffs, this is about as good a matchup as you can hope for, and that means something. So I don't blame anyone for playing Wilson this week.
The Seahawks are sort of like a poor man's version of the Steelers in the sense that it very much appears their opportunity is concentrated between three players, right? Wilson, yes. Rawls, Baldwin, and everyone else is so far behind the rest of the group. And I'm referring to Ben, Bell, and Brown, like for the Steelers here. But everyone is so far behind them in terms of, you know, their opportunity and their, you know, their ability to see the ball, that there is safety in just sort of knowing a team is locked into what they want to do on offense, and those are the three guys. And you kind of can just, the rest of them just become upside plays, you know, the, you know, Paul Richardson's of the world or guys like that. Even Jimmy Graham to some degree, who's kind of expensive. But I just, those guys are secondary and third at best options for this team. The team is very concentrated on what they want to do, and they made their intentions clear. And so from that way, it's kind of easy. So at this point, we're just kind of evaluating matchup. The second game, the night game, is, and it's only the night game because of the Patriots, is Houston at the Patriots. Patriots are minus 15 here. They are obviously heavy favorites. It seems inconceivable that they'd be able to lose this game. It just really, almost no matter what happened, like no matter, I mean, I feel like Houston could like somehow get two pick sixes and still lose. Like, it seems like so out of the realm of possibility that New England could ever possibly lose this game. I guess my question here is, you know, Houston's a decent defense. It's really the only reason that this spread isn't higher, probably, because their offense is so trash that if their defense wasn't just half good or they're better than that, this would be like a minus 20 situation. Well, Houston just wouldn't even be in the playoffs, so don't. I guess I can probably stop that line of thinking. But what do we do with a New England team if we're worried, A, about the blowout, B, guys like Brady are expensive, and he hasn't really had to throw that much since he's been back, just because their offense is so high-powered. They've sort of split some of the running back duties. I mean, I get worried with lines like this, just in terms of New England, especially if this isn't the regular season where they need to keep their pedal to the metal. They could just turn their foot off or take the foot off the gas and kind of pack it in if the game's out of hand. How do we evaluate the Patriots?
Well, the easy way to do this, Doug, is to return earlier in the season. And in that point, Jacoby Brissett looks like an excellent value, because the Patriots beat them 27-0 with Jacoby Brissett under center. Like, this matchup is obviously incredibly one-sided. It's kind of interesting because, you know, the Patriots are obviously a totally different team with Tom Brady than Jacoby Brissett. That goes without saying. But they did run the ball 24 times and ran really, really well against the Texans earlier this season. Blunt had 105 yards and a touch, and, you know, some other dudes got some rushes in there as well. Everyone on Houston was bad. You'd like to say, well, that's because they had Brock Osweiler at quarterback, but guess what? That's who's playing quarterback in this game, too. Lamar Miller bad as well. Like, it's really, really hard to imagine playing anyone from the Houston side of the ball whatsoever. And then the Patriots are in a weird spot where, yeah, like a guy like Julian Edelman, for instance, at 7,000, like, that's such a good price for him. I still hold on to belief that he's simply underpriced. Like, you know, 13 targets against Miami was excellent, 28 fantasy points. But then 8 targets, 12, 15, 12, 11, 17. Like, he had targets to spare and just wasn't able to do anything with them. I don't think that continues throughout the playoffs, but in a game where they're favored by 15 points, is this the one where he breaks out? I'm just not sure. So, weird situation. I could see Edelman being an excellent big tournament play. I think a lot of people can talk themselves into him for cash games, too. And actually, I think it's kind of close between him and Baldwin, if we're being honest.
I'm with you on Edelman. I get a little bit worried that they just don't need to do it late in the game. But that being said, like, he's been sort of script independent too, where, you know,
they didn't need to do it against Miami either.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, I was gonna say they killed Miami, and he still was able to break off a long touchdown, and was still, the targets were there for him. He's close. He's actually not showing up that high on our system right now, which I'm gonna go take a look at after the podcast is over, just to make sure all the inputs on him are absolutely correct, because he's not showing up probably as much as he should be considering his target share. I get a little worried about the running back situation, mostly because they've been more inclined to split the carries between Blount and Lewis in the short term. It was 14.
Yeah, that's true. Lewis wasn't in the picture earlier this season.
Right. It was 14 to 11 in terms of carries last week. Lewis provides that sort of change of pace that Blount doesn't have, and that's a that just only makes the Patriots better, right? To like to just say we have just all even more deadly personnel that we can kind of kill you kind of just in really every facet of the game. So I just get worried. I just get worried that we get to the fourth quarter, it's 34-3 or something like that, and we're just not and Jacoby Brissett's
back on the field.
Say Garoppolo, someone like the backup quarterback's back in here, and because why even bother risking it? And there's nothing to play for except for the next week at this point. So that's just my only concern here. I think some people will be able to try to talk themselves into Brock Osweiler because I think people think he was good last week or he was decent. I guess, okay, here's the thing. I think people think that he wasn't terrible last week, and to him, that's good, right? So if you're only comparing him to himself, he still stinks. No one need to get confused about the Osweiler situation here. Osweiler is bad. He's very bad. He was still bad last week. He just happened to just not be like dreadfully bad. Right. People calling for his benching again, bam. And that's the only reason I think people think he was like, oh, Osweiler got, because I've heard people say, oh, Osweiler got the job done. No, he sucked. He sucked. And he just didn't like throw three interceptions. And that was the only reason. And they won. Yeah. And that's the only reason you're not talking about it. So be very careful.
And they won because of their defense. I mean, they won because their defense 100%. Swallowed Connor Cook alive. Right?
I heard people say like he managed the game. No. Folks, he did nothing. He's bad still. So I just don't want anyone talking themselves into Brock Osweiler, even in catch-up mode. No thanks. He's the very last quarterback of all the quarterbacks this week that I would roster, and I'm factoring in price as well. Let's move over to KC. This game's interesting. KC and Pitt, right? So this game, KC is the favorite. They are favorite -1.5, which is basically like saying a push, and they're getting that -1.5 because of the home field advantage. This is a really low implied total for the Steelers, somewhere in that 21 range. You almost never see them this low, and that is probably a testament to KC's defense on the season. They've been a top 10 DVOA defense this season, particularly good. Oh, actually, no, I take that back. They're 14th in DVOA this year. But they have been very good against the pass, though. They rank 7th, not as good against the rush. For the Steelers, how much does this sort of implied total affect how you view guys like Bell, Brown, and Roethlisberger, obviously those being the big three on this team, that they get the lion's share of the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a perplexing line to me. And, it's weird because it's like Vegas seems to be betting you to take the over on the Steelers. And just as a quick sanity check, the Steelers scored 43 points against this team in week three right. This season. Like, they just absolutely destroyed Kansas City. And while, things change and both the teams are in much different positions than they were then, and Kansas City actually wound up with a better record than the Steelers overall in the season, I understand all of that. But it's still hard to ignore the absolute beating that they put on Kansas City. And that's pretty strange. I mean, it's pretty strange to have teams meet in the playoffs when one beat the other by 30 points. That being said, I think you do, we always caution people against using a small sample size. Obviously, a one game is a very, very small sample size, and Kansas City overall in the season was a respectable defense, and they would look a lot more respectable had it not been for that one individual game. So, I would still say that for the Steelers' purposes, the fantasy value is so concentrated, primarily among Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. I personally won't play Roethlisberger for a lot of the same reasons. I'm not interested in Matt Ryan, which is he's just similar to some of the elite options and just not quite elite to me. But Bell and Brown, I think, are Bell in particular, I think, is just fully in a class of his own right now, where there's almost no price that would be too high. Like, they would have to price him so high on FanDuel in particular that it would make him completely unplayable, because you'd have to play all like $4,500 guys around him. But what more do you want from a guy than scoring a 30, 27, 16, 50, 20, not a typo, 22, 30, 30. Like, he just scores every single week. It kind of doesn't matter. He scored 27 points against Baltimore, a better defense than this. So I think he'll be a chalk play once again. It'll also be the type of thing where if you've been playing DFS all season and you're going into this week on a four-game slate, you're just not going to choose this week to not have Le'Veon Bell. So I think you'll see him basically everywhere. It does get a little closer to me when you start talking about Roethlisberger and Brown, because, I guess I want your take on Antonio Brown. He went from being a guy who was a must-play on the same level or higher than Le'Veon Bell in terms of public perception of him, to falling out of favor quite dramatically, to then returning last week with two touchdowns. So what are you making of Brown right now?
I mean, he's great. He's clearly probably the best receiver on the slate, and just in terms of raw skill. I think the reason you can get away from him is just because there is other wide receiver value. And so if he's going to be the most expensive guy at one of the lowest implied totals, he's had good target share, but not crazy, like Edelman, like kind of target share. Like, he just hasn't really been there as much, I don't think. I'll go back and double check that number, but I just don't think. I think main the reason you can get away from him is that because of the other guys like Baldwin, and we're going to talk about some of the Green Bay guys coming up here. That's my case for sort of getting away from. I'm very concerned about this line. I did some like just poking around of like. So Pittsburgh started at 23 and dropped to 21 and a quarter pretty quickly. And I was looking to see if weather was an option. Like, the weather looks fine, 37 degrees or something like that in KC. No real big injury news. And so I don't know if someone wants to like leave us a tweet or something at Daily Fantasy SR or like a comment about why they think this line is drawn. And if I missed something, then you know I'll definitely apologize and just say I need to do more research. But
and I'll apologize on your behalf, dude.
Thanks, buddy.
That would have been brutal if you would have missed something there.
I'll just blame it on you for distracting me or something like that. And that's why I wasn't able to get it. But so I guess that's really the thing that I have most concern. Bell to me is still pretty much just a lock. Like, the game can go every which way, and he's still just going to probably see the amount of touches he needs to at least creep toward value.
Yeah, they'll pass it to him when they're behind or ahead, and he'll run and pass when they're ahead.
And there just isn't as much to get excited about in terms of running back as there is a wide receiver. So I think when you're really kind of counting your nickels and dimes and just making sure you can get every piece of good money in, Bell's the guy that you'd probably rather play besides Brown. There again are a team where they just don't seem to go many other directions between Bell and Brown, and that's kind of it. I expect to see a lot of the same thing here. You know, they have some auxiliary guys, and like Jesse James was out there. He really didn't do much last week with Darius Green hurt. It's just hard to get excited about some of their other, you know, finite pieces. That's not the right word, but they're auxiliary pieces. They're really tournament only. On the KC side of the ball, Spencer Ware looks like he sat out last week because of injury, or excuse me, week 17 because of injury. And mostly just it looks like precautionary reasons, just to save him for this game. KC wasn't playing for a ton. He's kind of a guy that, like, you want to believe that he's the bell cow sort of back for this team. It doesn't always work out to be the case because they just like don't really even run a ton of plays. Like, what can we get excited for on the KC side of the ball? Spencer Ware, even like Alex Smith, you know, the receiving core with Kelsey. What do you like on KC side?
Well, excited is too strong a word for any of these guys, unfortunately. I mean, you could consider a guy like Travis Kelsey this week. He's kind of an interesting case because, yeah, like you can get 100-yard upside from him. He did that in 5 of the last 7 games, but he also had a single reception against San Diego in a game that they really wanted to win. And so, you know, paying up for him is probably more of a luxury type of thing than someplace you really want to lock in for cash games, just because, say, you go down to a guy like Jason Witten or somebody for more than 2,000 less, who could conceivably be just as good or better than Kelsey this week. I just don't think that's where you want to go. I mean, Jeremy Macklin's a guy you can consider for big tournaments. He's super, super cheap, and you know, he's had a little bit of extra rest with the bye. He had health concerns going in and out of the season. I mean, you can probably hear the inherent question marks after each one of these guys. Right. It's just how Kansas City rolls, man. Like, for a team to win this many games with almost no fantasy viable players is really an accomplishment, but that's kind of how I view him right now.
Yeah, I really don't mind Ware, just because I do think that they do see him as their best running back option. I think that's pretty clear. He hasn't been great, but he is just coming significantly less than some of these other players, so I don't really mind it. I just, he's just not, again, he's not, you can't lock him up for like 22 carries or something like that. But he's priced below some of those guys in a game that they are slight favorites. So I don't mind totally going there. But yeah, I'm with you in terms of just kind of, you know, throwing your hands up and saying, I'm just not sure what their total plan is here. They don't have guys that really stand out above the rest of the crowd. I mean, I think maybe some people talk themselves into Tyreek Hill. They've been using him in sort of a hybrid fashion where he'll get the targets. They do just kind of hand him the ball at times as sort of this, like, not third down running back, but just change of pace running back. He's kind of become that in the short term for FanDuel, I'm looking at the FanDuel page, for the Chiefs. So I think there's something to be said for him there. kind of has run hot with touchdowns, which is going to make those game logs look pretty good. The touchdowns really, and especially the long touchdown runs, are going to make that game log look fantastic when it might just be a little bit lucky. So obviously an elite-ish talent, but just be careful about looking at the game log and saying, hey, this guy's just double digits every single week. He's broken off a lot of long touchdowns, and that is just not easy to continue to replicate.
It's not a recipe for sustainable success, no doubt about
it. Not when it's built into your price.
And I would also offer some caution on where, too. I mean, where's a guy, he's cheap, and you don't have a ton of options this week. I totally get it. But, if you want to double down on where, that's so many games where he touched the ball fewer than 20 times. He's got his own injury question marks. I don't know. I wouldn't be... And maybe this is just a bad week to play DFS football in general. That's always not always good for business for us to say that. Like, we're supposed to say, hey, man, the value is insane. Go sign up for the optimizer now. We're all going to crush it this week. But I guess we just tend to be more honest than that. Just where with these rib stuff and the opportunity thing. Like, I don't know. Like,
I think you can talk yourself into him. He's a little bit more viable on DraftKings at 5,200. So I think that I'm...
Yeah, that's fair.
Because on DraftKings, again, the pricing's sharper there, and you're going to really need at least a mid-tier, if not two, and a punt play, if not two.
That's a good point.
To get in anyone, like any of the Bells or Elliots of the world, to be able to fit any guy like that, even just really, honestly, even just one of those guys into your lineup is going to be, with anything else in terms of just sort of... upper middle tier pricing guys, you're going to need a guy like Ware, and then you're really going to have to start rolling the dice on some of these other cheap guys. So I think I'm with you. It's not a fantastic week, especially in a week place like DraftKings, where again the pricing is very sharp. The final game is the 4:40 game on Sunday, Dallas at Green Bay. Probably appointment television. The ratings for this are going to be off the charts. Dallas is obviously the public team, and Green Bay is actually a very public team, and Rodgers is probably the most public-y outside of Brady, just NFL player, I would say. So I think that the ratings for this game are going to be absolutely off the charts. It's going to be a fun watch. The Dallas team, they're kind of Elliott left, Elliott right, and it's hard to imagine they get away from that game plan this week. What do you see on the Dallas side of the ball against a Green Bay team who has they've been middle of the pack DVOA against the run, a little bit worse against the pass this year?
Well, Dallas is another, again, interesting team. I'm overusing that word this week, but another situation of a less than ideal matchup overall. But I think Green Bay actually kind of sneaky bad against the pass. Their reputation isn't of this sieve-like defensive unit and against the pass. And obviously they were pretty solid against the Giants last week, but they've allowed the most unqualified, the absolute highest number of yards per attempt this season to opposing passers. And that just means something, for fantasy purposes. This could happen for any number of reasons. The Green Bay has a very good offense, right? So teams try to pass against them a lot, but that's actually pretty troubling. The only issue here is with Dak Prescott coming into this game, being a rookie quarterback, it's kind of hard to imagine also that the Cowboys are just going to load up on him and just let him turn loose, right? I mean, several games on his game log where he'll throw fewer than 30 passes a game. So, yeah, he's cheap, obviously, and you really like that, but is this really the matchup, at home in his first playoff game? Are they going to turn him loose for 40 passing attempts? I'm just not sure. And that's just not really the team that they are. That being said, I think the extra adrenaline could chip in, and maybe he runs the ball a little bit more. We often see that with running or quarterbacks who can run as they get into the playoffs for the first time. Dak also can score touchdowns with his feet too. So I think he's a pretty interesting option. And I think, again, given the limited options on the slate and the fact that we might want to pay up elsewhere, I could actually see him sneaking into cash game lineups this week. How about you?
Yeah, no, he's 6,000 on DraftKings. I have a feeling he is just the chalk there. It's so much cheaper for what you're getting, and it just allows you to get pay just up at the other positions and where you're really going to need to. And I don't mind doing it really in this game. Now, again, like you mentioned, they might not just have to unleash him. The way to beat Green Bay is just to keep Rodgers off the field. And the way to keep Rodgers off the field is to just run Elliott. This is why you have Elliott behind that offensive line. You want to get him the ball as many times as possible. And I think on FanDuel for cash games, you can just stack Bell and Elliott together and just feel like you're getting a lot of a very, very high floor at running back. I think Prescott might just end up being the cash game play just because of the price. And that's really mostly what it is. It's the price that he will run a lot, or run a decent amount at least. They're favorite here. They're supposed to put up a decent amount of points. Green Bay's defense, I'm with you, just not a very good defense. Rodgers is the guy that keeps them in games. I think I could see stacking Dak and Elliott together kind of and feeling pretty good about it, considering, especially considering Dak's price. What about guys like Dez Bryant and the rest of the receiver core? I guess throw Witten in there for Dallas.
Yeah, Dez Bryant generally a pass. On FanDuel in particular, he's just more expensive than what he actually produces on the field. So that's pretty much all you need to say about him. Not to say he isn't a big upside play, but I think people perceive him to be of a higher value just based on his name than his actual production. Like if it was the same body in production with a different name, I don't think he'd be 7,600. 10 targets just once since November began, basically. So just not an elite wide receiver at all. Like nothing compared to Doug Baldwin. Again, for fantasy purposes, obviously he's a tremendous talent, et cetera, et cetera. Whitnack, I think, interests me a little bit more. And it's simply not because he's a better player in real life football, but just from a daily fantasy commodity. Now, he's a guy who has actually similar target share to Dez Bryant from week to week, but he costs $4,900 at a position where saving up really, really matters. And so, yeah, he could go into this game, and it could be one of the weeks where he only has five targets, you know, and that wouldn't be ideal, but he could also have 10, and he could just be their safety outlet. And again, in a game that is going to be a little faster paced, it's going to be a little bit more intense, I wouldn't be surprised to see Dak zero in on some of his, you know, safer options. And so I actually do like Witten quite a bit this week.
I think you can totally live with Witten's floor considering the price. He's a guy sure. I'll probably be running out there, maybe not exclusively in cash, because we'll go to the Green Bay side of the ball where there's another guy here. But Witten's a great play this week. I think there's just the floor is clearly high enough considering the game that for 3,500 on DraftKings, that kind of seems almost lock it up territory. 4,900, he's still under 5K on FanDuel. Those are great prices for him and the kind of targets he's seen this season. So yeah, I'm totally with you there. Rest of the Dallas kind of wide receiver core, the guys like Williams, Beasley, no thanks. I don't think, unless you really are just trying to fit in a price play, which again you might need to do. That's
just tournament upside, yeah, for me too. I think Terrence Williams has that, but yeah, it's gross.
Green Bay side, doesn't look like Jordy Nelson is going to play. This is probably the biggest news of the entire weekend. Nelson not playing shifts the sort of balance of receiving power on Green Bay significantly. We saw that last week. Two guys like Adams, Cobb, to some degree Jared Cook, who did see a fair amount of targets last week. And by the way, Cook saw targets even with Nelson, while Nelson was still on the field. It wasn't for very long. He took that shot pretty early in the game. I really felt bad. You could tell right when he took the shot to the ribs and kind of just rolled off onto the field. It was one of those funny that was the wrong word. It wasn't funny. It was one of those situations where the NFL doesn't want injuries to happen, but whenever the injury happens, like sort of on the sidelines, and you can just roll the body of bones over onto the sidelines and keep the game going, I'm sure they were like sort of just feeling okay about that, because he kind of just took the hit on the sidelines. And they just were like, okay, keep these gladiators going, man. The guy, whatever. That guy will be fine. At least he's off the field already. But where do you see... what happens with Green Bay here? Nelson is their best receiver. He's their target leader on the season. Adams has been a very, very good possession receiver this season. We saw what Cobb did last game. Do you see those guys going into this game as sort of chalk plays, with assuming that Nelson does not play?
Well, I think Cobb will be higher owned than Adams, and I think it will be a mistake. I broke this down extensively in the article that we put out this week, but Adams has just been such a solid targets guy, and frankly has plenty of red zone upside too. Like, it's not like they ignore him once they get down there. The guy's 12 touchdowns this year. Right. So, he's obviously more expensive than Cobb, and that's a concern. Like, you don't want to pay more if you think you're going to get similar production, but Cobb is just so much harder to evaluate for me. I think a lot of people will look to last week and be like, Cobb is back, baby, Jordy's out. Cobb had the 3 touchdowns, 32 fantasy points, 116 yards receiving. Everything is good to go, but like, you're just not going to catch a Hail Mary every week, you know? Right. Like, the guy had 7 targets, and I don't know if you saw, but it turns out Rodgers wasn't even targeting him on that Hail Mary. So you can actually take one of those targets away and give him 6 targets, and you take away those yards and that touchdown. Like, and I think that's actually reasonable, by the way. Like, normally we don't want to say, like, you know, normally I guess we offer caution when people say things like, well, you take away the one big run. Well, sometimes that's built into the package. I don't think you can fairly say that that's built into the package with Cobb, given just what a random occurrence that seemed to be. I think you can look at the prior game logs and see 1, 3, 3, 3, 7, 5, and just see that Adams is at least the higher priority receiver. I mean, yes, Cobb has dealt with injury things this season, and yes, Jordy was there and so on. And I don't think Cobb is a bad play. I just don't want anyone to misunderstand me there. It's just that if you have to pick one, and you might have to pick one, I'm going to pick Devontae Adams.
I'm totally with you there. Adams is a guy, I think we have enough of a sample size to know that Rodgers will just kind of look his direction as much as possible. I'm 100% with you. I think that people will look at that Cobb game and overvalue the three touchdowns. And look, again, Jordy only saw three targets. He was out pretty early in the game. Jared Cook still out-targeted Cobb. 9 targets from Cook. It was a guy that he was – they found a matchup that they liked against the Giants D, and they were able to kind of go after that over and over. Now, again, the Giants D, from a secondary perspective, is better than Dallas. So Dallas ranks 18th against the pass in DVOA this season. Giants were 4th. So this is a better situation with Cobb facing – just really with both of the guys facing Dallas rather than the Giants. I do think that you see them both as chalk. It's kind of a shame with Cobb in the sense that if Jordy had like gotten hurt at the end of the game, and I think we would be staring at a Cobb at like 4,000 salary sort of thing, or like if they come out during the week that he wasn't going to play, the fact that he was able to put the game in before prices were locked up for the next week drove the price way up on him and probably out of the zone of that I feel comfortable playing him. And it's going to be a weird fade because I think a lot of people are going to play him. So this is where I just want to make sure that we're, you know, feeling very confident about what we think his overall opportunity is going to be going into this week, because I do think you're going to see a very heavy Cobb ownership, and it could be correct, right? Like it could end up being that this just is the play, and I'm just not sure our system is going to totally get there, especially when you have a guy like Edelman for 500 more on FanDuel. Like, who would you rather play, Edelman or Cobb for 500 more? Is it like, let's say you can save the 500 at kicker or something like that, or you go on to a slightly worse defense, but is it even close for you between?
Yeah, this would be interesting. No halftime challenge. Oh, let people know
hit
that.
Hit it, buddy, before we really get quick. Out of here.
Yeah, I know it. Well, no Halftime is a great app for daily fantasy football and for daily fantasy sports in general. You know, as we phase out of the DFS football season and into basketball and eventually baseball, No Halftime allows you to basically play one-on-one, almost player prop-based daily fantasy challenges where you pick a player you think that guy's going to outperform. So in this case, you'd be deciding between Edelman and Cobb. You think that Edelman has a clear advantage and that everyone's going to be on Cobb for unjustified reasons in your mind. You issue that challenge to the world, and you can see if people accept it. For any amount of money, $10 to $50, $100, whatever, people take it or they don't. If they don't, you just get your money back. If they do, well, you've put yourself in a situation that you think is higher expectation. So, again, nohalftime.com, DFSR25 will get you $25 bonus up to a $25 deposit, and we will hope to see you over there because we're on that app all the time. So Cobb or Edelman, it's really close. I think Edelman has the higher floor, and I don't think it's close, and I would actually just be shocked to see Cobb outperform him from a ceiling perspective too. You know, both are risky in my mind. Edelman just plays a bigger role in his team's offense, so I like him more.
Yeah, I think that's actually one you could get accepted to. You could put in, you take Edelman. This is sometimes, you know, with no halftime, you want to make sure. Sometimes you'll see people, you know, put out like Kevin Durant versus like, you know, Patrick McCall or something like that, and you're just like hoping someone clicks on it. Then you get like sort of some ones that are a little bit closer. This is one where I do think you will get it readily accepted. Like, you could put in 5 of these on No Halftime with taking the Edelman side, and you'll get all 5 accepted on the Cobb side, and I think you're in fantastic position doing something like that. So
I do too.
I would just open up No Halftime right now to put a couple of those in. Let's see. I'll test my theory and let you know how it goes next week, but I'm pretty sure that this is one that I would feel pretty good about getting money in. I would feel almost great. All right, we're from Daily Fantasies.
And we'll talk to you next week when Cobb scores 3 more touchdowns.
Oh, I'll just, see yeah. I'll, yeah, just... No need to hate mail us stuff like that. We asked for it enough. Okay, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site, read all the free content we have going up every single day, NBA, NFL, NHL, really every DFS sport that you can play. We have free content going up about that, and we also have chance for a free 3-day trial to our projection system for NFL and NBA, which includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. That's free for 3 days for you to check out, no risk, and then it's just $29.95 a month after that, all sports included under that umbrella. About as good a deal you'll get in the industry. Buddy, enjoy the weekend of football. We'll be back next week to talk about whoever makes it through.
See you then, my man.